Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Pets and Vets today joining us on the line, Dr. Susan Zakuli of the Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland and Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga. Got a question about your dog or your cat or your other pet? Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Zakuli and Dr. Dallas, your pet questions all coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today, and here to take your calls, Dr. Susan Zakuli of the Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland and Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga, often called the Cat Whisperer. Dr. Zakuli is a vet who specializes in feline care and has done that for more than 24 years. Dr. Dallas specializes in treatment of chronic health issues in pets using an integrative approach with an emphasis on Chinese medicine. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Dr. Chris Dallas, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today, Ray?
Oh, super. And great to have you back here on the program. Dr. Zakuli, how are you?
I am great also, Ray. It's nice to be back. We have not been on for a bit, so it's very nice to hear your voice.
Well, it's tough to get you two scheduled, so it's nice to have you both here today. And the lines are already loading up. Let's go right to the phones. Amy in Queensbury. Amy, you're on.
Hi, I have a 14-year-old Chihuahua who at least once a week brings up bile, and it can be in the middle of the night, it can be any time during the day. I have done my research, I looked at pancreatitis and all that other stuff. He did get an ultrasound done, there was inflammation in the lining of his intestine, and they wanted to put him on an ID digestive canned dog food. I read the ingredients on that, and I wouldn't, there's no way I'm giving that to my dog. So I started moving towards human-grade food for him. I went towards low-fat, chicken breast, and along those lines, but I'm also looking at there is not a lot of choline and taurine and glycine in those foods, and I'm wondering if I give him human-grade food, what would be a really good balance of food that's low-fat and has all those essential amino acids in there?
Okay.
Wow, you've done your research. That's great. So I would say one of the best ways to make sure you're covering all your bases and you're going to be home cooking is to just, you know, pick a rotation of different meats. So maybe if there's a way to just not stay with chicken, and you can make batches, you know, that last you a week or two and then just switch on to something else. You really just kind of need to balance it over time. So you could get also some very lean ground beef. After you cook it, you can actually pour the fat off if you wanted to stay low fat. And the same goes with, you know, let's say ground turkey. Those are probably the three main things that you could rotate. Actually, whitefish is another nice, easily digested protein as well that's fairly low fat. So if you rotate, you know, and you can, you'll probably achieve that balance over time that you're looking for. And then just keep the rest of the ingredients simple.
Okay, and that's only with the meat? Okay, so he doesn't need the rice and the spinach and all that stuff in there as well?
No, I would definitely rotate. Yes, so I'm sorry. So I would say, yes, you definitely can't just feed meat. So assuming that you kept the rest of the diet the same, you could rotate that meat to go for that balance of amino acids that you're talking about.
Amy, thanks a lot for the call. It's Pets and Vets today on Vox Pop. Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Zakuli join us. Ann is in New Paltz. Ann, you're on.
Hi. My question is about my four-year-old pit bull. She has completely torn her ACL. We had x-rays that showed that. And She's very fit, extremely muscular, very, very active, has a younger sister whom she has to keep up with. And I'm trying to understand all the different directions that one can go in for the ACL, either repair with the patella slice or just the lesser invasive treatment or just keeping her still for 8 weeks, and whether or not she should have some shots of glucosamine to help that heal. And then I've heard that if you do have the patella sliced repair, the other hip can go in just a couple of years because you've changed the angle of the hip.
Yes. So you've got a number of options here. If her cruciate ligament is completely ruptured, you're probably going to be looking at a surgical repair. It takes a really long time for a knee that's that unstable to scar down and develop some stability. And so in the meantime, she's walking three-legged, which means she's putting all that pressure on that good knee. So these surgeries are really all about preserving the good knee and trying to avoid that ligament from rupturing. So the major the most common surgery that's done for a dog her size would be the TPLO, which is a more aggressive surgery. However, if you combine it with some physical therapy afterwards, it's probably going to be your best bet because you'll really help her build that muscle back up in that surgical leg. However, there's definitely no guarantee that she won't rupture the other ligament as well. And that actually happened to my own dog when I was in vet school. So one knee, she ruptured at 10 months and the other at 18 months. So she had two surgeries 10 months apart. And so I do feel your pain. I know exactly what you're going through.
And thank you very much for the call today. It's Pets and Vets Today. And the number is 800-348-2551. Cynthia in West Taconic. Cynthia, you're on.
Cynthia, you're on.
Hi. Well, so I've had cats for 60 years. We just had a new one. She's about 3.5 years old. She's pretty small. She's very sweet. She also has a fierce temper. And although she started out, drawing blood with her bites and scratches, she's gentled that up. The problem is that I've never had a cat that like this that just goes completely bonkers over food. She will not get off. Every surface belongs to her. If we go to the counter, she's on the stove. If we go to the stove, she's in the sink. If we go to the sink, she's on the table. You cannot have food anywhere. And she needs to be locked in another room when we cook, when we clean, and when we eat.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you have any suggestions?
Before you answer, Cynthia, that sounds exactly like my children. All right, Dr. Sekouli, go ahead.
Oh, wow. And you've had cats for 60 years. I don't know if I can tell you anything more because I think you've got me bit. I agree with you. I think there are some cats that just are very, very food motivated. I think your challenge is to find some food maybe that will satiate her a little bit more. And then I agree with you right now. I would eliminate her being in the areas where food is until you can get her somewhat trained to not be that aggressive. And I think there's a level and a grade of your comfort with her. There are some newer foods, and we talked about a little bit on the prescription diets, but Royal Canin has one out called Satiety. And it's similar to some of the supplements that you can get for humans to take away from that urge to eat all the time. And so that may be helpful, but I think I agree. She's young enough yet that you're going to be challenged by this for a while longer. Are there other cats in the house?
No. In fact, you're she only doesn't one. Like other okay. cats. We got her at a cat rescue place and they said, the other people had to return her because she didn't get along with the cats.
Interesting.
So she's a single cat here.
Got it.
She's,
okay.
She's good.
And where are you feeding her right now? Where are you feeding her right now?
She has her own little bowl in her own area. It's sort of in the entrance way in the kitchen.
Okay.
And I don't
think that may be part of it too, is maybe try feeding her in a back room so that then the food feeding area is totally separate from where you're spending a fair amount of your time. That may be helpful.
Hey, Cynthia, thanks for the call. We have to take a break here. Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas join us on this Pets at Vets edition of Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Ciculli join us. This email, well, I'll tell you what, we'll run through a few emails here. This one's from Steven. And Steven says, I have a dog named Bacchus who is very friendly. When I take him to the dog park, all of the other owners are wearing masks and maintaining social distance. However, our dogs do not, and I allow people to pet Bacchus. Let's assume I unknowingly have the virus and am asymptomatic. I'm very affectionate with my dog, transfer the virus to some of his fur. Can another person contract the virus from petting my dog? And that's from Steven.
Hi, Steven. So that was a big question when COVID first started, and we wondered if people could be bringing the virus to us as veterinarians on their pet's fur. And over time, we have come to realize that that's probably not the case. That would make the dogs a vector, meaning that they're carrying the virus on their fur. And Sue, have you heard anything more about that since that was first looked at early on in the pandemic?
No, I'm in agreement with you. Dr. Dallas, I think that was a concern, but not proven.
Yep.
Okay.
So I would say you're okay. Keep going to that dog park.
This email is from Joel in Blooming Grove. And Joel writes, I have a cat that seems to have a chronic sneezing condition. It's okay. The problem is that gobs of mucus are, thank you for this, Joel. The problem is that gobs of mucus are ejected when he sneezes. If I don't catch him in the act, it dries out on the surface it lands on. Any idea what's causing the sneezing? Allergy, perhaps? Well, thank you, Joel. How about Susan Ciculli? You take this one.
It's probably one of my biggest nemesis, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
They're called chronic snufflers.
Yeah.
And they are notorious for doing exactly what Joel's describing. They, as people would say, they pace the walls when they sneeze. And there are thoughts that it may be related to the herpes infection. That's one of the culprits for it. There can be other upper respiratory infections. They can have maybe just a decreased immune system and mucous membranes from it. And there are as many varied solutions to that problem, from increasing the moisture in the air and using vaporizers.
Yeah.
Sirenia is a medication that we're using now for vomiting in cats, but we use it as a nasal drops, and that seems to help. So there are some newer trials that seem to work in some cats better than others. But it is, I share in his angst with it, but keep working. It is, I think it's finding a balance. I know, Dr. Dallas, you and I have talked about, you know, increasing their immune system enough you know, keep them from not being so bad. I think that would be your goal.
All right. This one is from Dave in Connecticut. Dave says, our six-year-old St. Bernard has been having issues between his toes. It started around 18 months ago and began in one location recurring occasionally, but now flares up on both front feet almost constantly. It has not responded to topical treatments, but does respond to prolonged antibiotics. The first sign is a red lump between his toes, which grows and then starts to weep serum. Our vet is great, and he is going to see a dermatologist at Tufts next week. I just wondered if you might share your thoughts about this issue, and that's from Dave in Connecticut.
Yeah, you know, I actually have been treating a American Bulldog with the same issue, and we got lucky with her. We just changed her diet, and over time, I did put her on Chinese herbs as well. I changed her diet, and over time, it was almost like a deep folliculitis, like a deep follicular infection, which is probably why it responds to the antibiotics. But yeah, I would definitely let the dermatologist get their hand on that. Yeah.
We're joined today by Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Sekouli. It's Pets and Vets, if you haven't figured that out. We'll do one more email now. We'll grab a few more later. This one's from Anne in Adams, Massachusetts. Anne says, there's a big park near me where everyone walks their dogs mostly off leash. It's not really a dog park, but there are a lot of dogs, and they're all doing their business. Some people pick up the poops, most don't, and I worry that it's not a healthy place to walk my dog. What is your thinking on dog parks? And that's from Anne in Adams.
All right. I like it when people pick up after their dogs.
Yes.
So we don't spread Giardia and other lovely parasites.
Right.
But it is nice to get the dogs out, too, and we all need to get out as well. So that's a tough call.
Okay. So you have no thoughts either way on dog parks?
No. I mean, as far as, like, an actual dog park where it's, like, designated for dogs and they're off-leash, I don't love them.
Okay.
Just because, at least anecdotally in our town, there are a lot of people who come to our dog park. Their dogs are not well-behaved. I don't think they realize that they probably are not good candidates for being at a dog park, and there's just too many fights that break out and very few dogs actually do okay at a dog park, though.
All right, fair enough. Back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551. Carol in Duanesburg. Hello, Carol.
Hi. I have a question about my dog. He's 10 years old, and the other day we came home after a walk. He was very excited because we had another dog there, and he threw up, but it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and he had eaten breakfast at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the kibble, which we feed him a very high-quality kibble, was still kind of whole and undigested. Is that normal?
Huh. No, that's not normal. Food should usually be out of the stomach within 60 to 120 minutes. Did he actually vomit? Like, was he heaving and then vomiting, or did the food just seem to kind of pop out of his mouth?
It just poured out of his mouth. He was just so excited. Yeah. All of a sudden, it just went all over.
So that's... Yeah, so if it just kind of popped out of his mouth, almost like he burped and a bunch of food came out, that's actually called regurgitation. Yeah. That's not actual vomiting. And that means that the food's probably sitting in his esophagus.
Ah.
So you'll want to probably take him to your vet, get a chest x-ray, and see if that's what's happening. Yeah, yeah. And that is treatable. I mean, I've had success with that with acupuncture, but I would at least try to get a diagnosis first. But that's definitely not normal.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carol.
You're welcome.
Pets and Vets today. Laura's in Albany. Laura, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm wondering about flea collars. I don't like the things that I've been reading about cancer and this, that, and the other thing. I have Seresto, but I've seen some things also, like cedar oil, like put it on a bandana. My dog has a very strong nose. So it also says make sure you do things that just check it out with them and make sure they're okay with it, and like feeding them a little garlic juice. So do you have any experience with how successful that type of thing can be?
I have a lot of experience with it. Dr. Sekouli, do you have thoughts on that, or have you found anything
no,
that works?
Yeah, no, I probably, you
not.
And I probably, yeah, we share a lot of agreement on, you know, I think there's a balance in all of this. I think fleas and flea problems can lead to lots of issues. So there has to be an ability to control the fleas. And then there's lots of options depending on your abilities to comb, wash, treat the dogs and the environment versus putting topicals and collars on them. Mm. And so I think it's very individual.
We're worried about, and for the dogs, of course, we're worried about tick-borne illnesses. And I have a lot of highly motivated clients who try all kinds of natural products. And I hate to say, I want them to work. I really, really do. Because my own dog died of Lyme disease, which is a fairly rare thing, but it happened to us. And they don't keep the ticks off the dogs. I have not found anything that has been reliable enough. And so I'm back to using the Seresto collar just because I can't handle another preventable death. Yeah.
Uh-huh. She gets a shot for Lyme disease too.
Yeah. So
she does get a shot for Lyme disease. Is that
okay? That helps. That can help prevent the really severe manifestations of Lyme. But unfortunately, our ticks carry so many other tick-borne illnesses as well. We've got Ehrlichia and Anaplasma, and they're like a scourge on our on our country right now. But so it's a tough call. I think you're right to question.
I think we all need to make sure that our chemicals are not that many. What I do like about the Seresto collar is you put it on, it's on, it treats, and then you can take it off. And use it when the dog is out or the cat's out, and then put it back in the tin when you don't need it. So I think there are some benefits, and I know there was a whole study that went out just recently within the last couple of weeks about the Seresto collars and causing a lot of problems. I know we have contacted the Bayer company directly, and they're telling us that there are not founded consistent reports with that study.
I don't know that that study mentioned the denominator, right? I mean, did they mention how many units have been sold of this Seresto collar? So if there were 1,700 cases of issues, you know, were millions sold? Because if that's the case, then that makes it a pretty unremarkable reaction rate.
What were the issues specifically?
Was it neurologic?
There were seizures, deaths. Yes, some deaths, but mostly seizuring activity.
Interesting. You know, our cat has been using that for years, and it works really, really well.
It works well. You're right. It's great.
What I like about it too is it protects the owners, so it keeps the ticks off the pets, so that the ticks are not coming in the house.
Yeah.
And that to me is the biggest benefit.
Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Sekulli join us on Pets and Vets today. It's 800-348-2551. Jim is in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim.
This is more or less a response to a caller's question about all creatures great and small on the last show.
What was the question? Because I have no idea.
In 1989, my mother and I attended the World Small Animal Veterinary Association meeting in conjunction with the British Small Animal Veterinary Medical Association meeting in Harrogate, England, at which Alf White, James Harriet, was the featured speaker. After the meeting, I was given a pre-signed autograph while he was tapping me on the shoulder and talking to his wife. At that time, he had pretty bad arthritis in his hand, so he signed the autographs ahead of time.
Cool.
There was to be a side trip to Thirsk, and the places where Harriet worked. Brian Sinclair, Tristan, was supposed to be to escort us around the Skeldale house. But unfortunately, he died a couple of months before. So it fell on Donald Sinclair, Siegfried, to take over.
Jim, thank you so much for bringing that memory back to me. That was probably one of the first books I read as a kid, and I was an avid reader. And oh my goodness, that is so great. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you for answering
a
question that I forgot what the question was. Annie in Utica. Annie, you're on. Hello, Annie.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
You bet.
So, my two cats, I am getting off of kibble and transitioning them to wet food. My one I found is a feral barn cat. She's having no problem at all with the transition. My other cat I rescued as a kitten has had nothing but kibble. So it's her I'm talking about. Her whole personality has changed since being on wet food. And I mean that in a really good way. She is so affectionate, has so much more energy, and she's on me like white on rice. And I'm just wondering, is this a common side effect from getting off the kibble? It's just really fascinating to me, the difference in her. So I'm just kind of curious as to maybe why and what's going on with her.
Hmm.
Yeah, she probably feels better.
I have to say, you know, it is. I see it so often when we can
convince every day. Clients.
Thank you for bringing this to our venue to share with everyone. It's a difficult thing to do sometimes, like you said, especially when they're used to it. But the benefits so outweigh the habit. Yeah. So nice.
Good.
Very good to hear.
Yep. Cats
I do
like
suggest,
me.
Though, offering at least something for their teeth. What I am still seeing is all canned, it's not going to provide enough. And Dr. Dowis, maybe you and I could chat about that. What do we provide for those cats that really need to crunch a little bit? I've been using that Hill's TD. I like it a lot. But, you know, like a few at night, I sort of go, oh, brush their teeth at night, you know, so give them the few dry treats. But I love canned food. So thank you for calling in about that.
This email seems to be appropriate to the topic. And this one's from James. James writes, hello, doctors. I noticed that in recent years, as a lot of vets are recommending the cleaning of pet teeth, my two cats are middle-aged, have bad breath, and have lost some teeth. I remember a time only a few decades ago when animal dentition was not high on the health concern priority list for pet owners. I love my cats dearly, but cannot afford to have their teeth cleaned regularly. Am I a terrible human being for not being able to afford regular anesthesia and cleaning? What are my options? And that's from James.
There you go. Dr. Dallas, what's your suggestions for keeping them healthy if we're going to a more canned food?
Yeah, this is a hard one too. So there are some herbal rinses that you can put in their teeth once they're clean that can help reduce the amount of tartar buildup. There was one that was studied out in California that was shown to reduce tartar by about 80%. And you just put it in their water. They just drink it. I have these conversations with people all the time, but it's a balance. It's a balance because ultimately their health does depend on their dental health. Okay. Dr. Sicily, do you have other?
If you were to go back years and years ago when we didn't really even have pet food, right? We fed them whatever, the scraps. I'm an elderly veterinarian now. I can say that easily. And we used to just give them whatever, or they caught a lot, right? So the raw meat or the bones would do a great job of chewing. Like on the dog side, you guys have a lot of those, you know, the raw necks or whatever that they can chew on. I find the challenge for cats is what do you then get them to comfortably chew on to keep that tartar from building up?
Yeah.
So I hear the client's concerns. I do know that if you can keep them up on a routine basis for the cleaning, it really does improve their health. So even if you end up doing it every other year or so for the cleaning, that would be beneficial.
Let's go back to the phones here. And Rick in Stockbridge. Rick, you're on.
Yes, I have a 4-year-old golden retriever. And for the past 2 years, he's been having seizures. But like 6 months apart. And recently he had one like 3 weeks ago, and then he had one Sunday. Excuse me. I was wondering if CBDs would help.
I have not had a ton of luck with CBD. Did you say he's on seizure medications or he's not yet?
No, he's not, because the vet didn't want to put him on it because he's under 6 years old.
Right. So if there's a holistic vet in your area, you might have some luck with some Chinese herbs. Particularly, the most luck I've had has been with seizures that happen in the fall and then in the spring. So that kind of distribution. If they're kind of all over the place, those I find are a lot harder to treat naturally. But CBD is one of those things that I just tell people, like, try it. You don't really have much to lose except for, you know, maybe $50. But if it works, great. And if it doesn't, you're probably doing other good things for him. Seizures are kind of a bummer, especially because the more seizures they have, the more seizures they create. So a seizure begets more seizures. So it could get worse. But if you have a holistic vet in your area, you might look them up and see if they have options for you, especially with Chinese herbs.
Rick, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Dr. Susan Sicily and Dr. Chris Dallas join us. It's Pets and Vets today, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Thank you. It's Pets and Vets today. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Susan Ciculli, Dr. Chris Dallas join us. And this is from John in Dalton. John says, I have a 5-year-old American short-haired cat, about 13, 14 pounds. Large cat, but not fat. Nice, gentle, smart cat. We've had her for about 16 months. She regularly coughs as if coughing up a hairball. It could come on at any time, but usually after she suddenly runs or jumps onto something. She never coughs up anything. She has coughed up a hairball once or twice, but that cough is different from the other, more from the stomach. The one I'm writing about seems it's from the lungs. Any ideas?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
coughing cat needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
It can be something serious. It can be something simple, but I always err on the more concerning from. And I missed a, he had it for 16 months. And how old is the cat?
Oh, I got to find it now. Hang on.
I'm sorry.
It's on my phone here. And I'm
5 or 6. Sorry, 5 or 6 years old.
Something like that. Yes. Let's just say 5 or 6.
So younger.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
So anything from, I mean, asthma is the worst case, or one of the worst case scenarios for a 5 or 6 year old. And that can get serious quickly.
Yeah, it's a 5 year old.
So I would encourage him to work that up.
Okie dokie. Here's a weird one. Good luck with this. I have no idea if you even want to bother. This one is from Nick. Nick says, I have had many roommates and lots of pets with them. Not always easy. Really, the question is, what are the thoughts on the pros and cons of having a bird? Also, what variety of bird is greatish? And great-ish. Ooh. And that is from Nick.
Oh, I like birds. I had a bird as a kid. I have a parakeet.
Question.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, they're loud. They're loud and they're messy.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a bird, Dr. Ciculli?
I have not, although I'll tell you, when I did my exotic rotation at University of Tennessee, there was a parrot there at Amazon. Is that what they are? Oh, my God. Gandalf. He was the best bird in the whole world. They are intelligent. Yeah. They live a very long time. They're amazing.
Okay.
So
if
he does his research, I think they're awesome pets.
Right. What could be annoying about having a parrot talking all the time at your house, right? That's perfect. Yes.
They do talk. I feel like a good starter bird is a cockatiel. You know, they live 10 to 15 years. I mean, that's the thing to remember is these birds, most of them need to go in your will because they can live, some of them, 50 to 70 years.
You're kidding me, really?
The bigger ones, the parrots.
It's a long-term commitment. Yeah, it's a long-term commitment. But if you get a smaller bird, my budgie lived, I don't know, 12 or 13 years. But, you know, a cockatiel, maybe 15. It's nice to start with a smaller one, but they're loud and they're messy and they create a lot of dust.
All right, fair enough.
And they're fun.
Let's go back to the phones here. Sarah in Albany. Sarah, you're on. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2-year-old, 30-pound male cockapoo who throws up early in the morning about probably 3 to 4 times a week. Not food. It's just bright yellow bile. And the vet suggested feeding him later at night or giving him, if he's already had dinner, giving him some kibble before bed. And also giving him Pepcid after he eats, but none of those approaches have worked. I wondered if you had any suggestions.
Oh, so feeding him, did you try feeding him a snack right before you go to bed?
Well, I've tried. I can't always get him to eat at that time, though.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So at what time of night is he vomiting? Is it like 5, 6 in the morning?
It's early in the morning, usually around 6 or 7.
6 or 7. So before he's eaten breakfast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, those are kind of the standards. Like I try to tell people just to give a snack, you know. And one thing you could do is split his dinner in half so he doesn't really get a full meal at dinner time, but he just gets maybe a little bit at dinner time and then most of his meal like really late. Like, I don't know what time you go to bed, but, you know, right before bedtime. It is kind of getting his rhythm set up with something different. But what do you feed him?
He eats kibble. It's a Health Extension brand kibble, and I give him just a teaspoon of a topper. He gets 1 cup morning and night of the kibble.
Okay, so what you could do is, you know, make part of his dinner more of like a fresh canned food, And that might get him more motivated to eat later in the day. But it sounds like he's just having a buildup of like acid in his stomach, especially since it's not happening. It's not like he's doing it at other times of the day or on a full stomach. So it does sound like he's just got a buildup of acid. I'm surprised the Pepsi didn't work. I usually just have people eat later during the day, but okay. Yeah, maybe try to, and you can, the other option is just to try a different kind of diet altogether and see if he likes something fresher, either canned or like the fresh pet that's sold in the grocery stores in the refrigerator section.
Okay, Sarah, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Paula in Newburgh. Paula, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two dogs, a Cavalier, King Charles. She'll be 11 months old tomorrow, and a senior. She's 14. I cook for them, and I do give them dry food just for the nutrients that come in the dog food. But is there any nutrients or vitamin that you can suggest that I can also add to their diet?
Yes. So how much of what they're eating is kibble versus home cooked? Like, what's the proportions, would you say?
Oh, I would say if they get an eighth of a cup of the kibble, that's it. They get mostly cooked food.
Okay. So I would consider getting them. I mean, are you giving them a calcium supplement? Are they getting calcium from anything?
No. Okay. Not, you know, I do put the pumpkin puree in it, but.
Yep.
No, calcium. I don't put anything in. That's why I would like a suggestion.
Yep, sure. So there are some dog supplements that you can get that are just a mineral-based supplement. The other option is you can grind up eggshells. So you just dry them and then put them in a coffee grinder or something to make them into a powder. And you use that at about a gram of calcium per pound of meat. So that's how much calcium. They need quite a bit of calcium, more than we do. So they can't just get it from... Yeah, you know, like they need bone, basically. You could buy bone meal. That's another option, is just buy some bone meal. And then, you know, you might want to get a canine multivitamin and give it a couple of times a week. Some people also really like a product called Balance It, which is designed for a home-cooked diet, and it's basically got what they need in it. A lot of veterinarians recommend it. So that's a product called Balance It. There's a website that will teach you how to balance out their food, too. So if you go to Balance It, I think it's balanceit.com.
Okay.
And that helps you figure out how to make sure that they're getting what they need. So, but calcium is definitely the most important thing to supplement.
All right, Paula, thank you very much for the call. It's Pets and Vets today with Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga and Dr. Susan Sekuli of Just Cats. We go to Chicopee, and Jonathan, you're on.
Yes, Paul.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a very simple question. Three of our four cats are getting quite heavy, overweight, and I'm wondering what's the proper amount of food to give to the cats. We feed them Friskies out of a can and also some dry food.
Okay.
My rule of thumb for most cats, I say, would get, this is Dr. Sekuli, you get 6, maybe 9 ounces of canned food a day. And maybe an eighth of a cup of dry per cat.
Okay. Nine ounces of wet food.
6 to 9 ounces. And, so, one of those, the larger cans are usually 5.5. So I usually say about a can of, that's about one can a day, one and a half per cat. It's typically the dry that's going to put the weight on the cat most times.
Mm.
They can gain with canned food, but you really have to give them a lot for them to gain a lot of food for it. So,
all right. Jonathan, thanks a lot for that one.
Good question.
800-348-2551, the number. And we go now to Gloversville. Richard, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 5-year-old Havapoo, and he's kind of high-strung. You know, he barks at everything, although he doesn't bark outside. He only barks when he's in the house. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, he's a little leery of strangers and things. He'll bark if anything is out of the way in his environment. If something, the neighbor started putting out a garbage pail, new neighbor, and he barked at the garbage pail. So he is a little bit nervous, but the problem we're having, and our vet says it's all his nerves, is he licks everything. He can't hold his liquor, as we say. he'll lick himself. He'll lick you. He'll lick pillows. He was just licking my wife's laptop.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I mean, it's constant. While we pet him, he tries to lick us. And, we stop if he tries to lick. And then when he's quiet, we pet him again, tell him he's a good boy. But it doesn't seem to be working. Hmm. What can we do about the licking?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's really disconcerting when we have guests.
Right.
Because they'll lick them too.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes. Right. It almost sounds like a little bit of an OCD kind of behavior. And I'm not necessarily into going straight to pharmaceuticals for that. Boy, that might be, I don't know if you heard the call earlier about CBD, but I'm wondering if CBD might take him down a notch. I don't know that a trainer, a behaviorist would help with this. It's not really that kind of a behavior.
Hmm.
No.
Yes, and yet I think there are certain dogs that are more lickers than others, right? Like that's just their personality. So from what you're describing, it sounds like he's always done a little of this, even as a puppy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, as a puppy, he had garbage belly. He ate coins. He ate batteries. He ate everything his hands on.
Yeah.
He ate a $5 bill. I mean,
Oh, geez.
Yeah. He's had this kind
that's
of
that's a tough one. He sounds like a fire constitution in Chinese medicine is just a little blazing a little too high.
Yeah.
So did your regular vet offer you any options at all, or did he just say live with it?
No, she just said it. She's just saying, well, hopefully it will have it, but he's fine.
Yeah.
He hasn't grown up enough, but I doubt he's going to.
Do you take him for walks a lot? Does he get out much? Does he get out for walks and just some mental stimulation?
Oh yeah, three or four times a day easily.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
And the weird thing about him is other than the garbage pail and a work sign for the roads, I've never heard him bark outside the house.
Huh.
Yeah.
And
when he meets
other dogs, he doesn't wag his tail. I don't know how they can. I don't know if other dogs can read him.
Huh.
Interesting. He's very friendly. Yeah. With other dogs, he's afraid of nothing. Well, I wouldn't say nothing. The only thing he's afraid of up here is the coyotes. But he tried to play with a snapping turtle. He's been skunked twice.
Wow.
He's not afraid of deer. He's not. We have a bear, and he's not afraid of the bear.
What a fun existence you have, Richard. Congratulations on that. Yeah. Either the dog or you need something to calm down. I don't know, but I think we'll have to leave it there and go to Susan.
I like the CBD choice. Well, I do. That might be a good one.
Hang on, Suzanne and Colony. Why would CDB, what CBD, what would that do? What have we seen that would do for a dog like that?
It can have a calming effect. Yeah, it can. Yeah. I mean, there's not much science behind CBD yet. They're working on it, but I have found it also helps with anxiety. I've had a few patients who've done well with it, but it just occurred to me after he hung up that one thing you could also do is just train the dog to lick so it only happens on a command.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would work or not, but if it's like training them to give that a command and then somehow get them to only do it when you give them the option. I don't know. I'm not a behaviorist. But
I'll tell you, Richard's call is certainly up there for the Pets and Vets call of the year so far. Suzanne and Colony, you got a couple of minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Sekouli. I have two cats, and I read someplace that cats don't like their whiskers to be touched while they eat.
Huh.
That's true.
Is that true? So, like, I've got a regular cat food. I've got a regular cat food bowl, which has got high sides. Should I be feeding them on a plate?
Yes, I love plates. They're much better for them. Absolutely. Good question. I like that. Yeah, that's what they've started noticing, that, if you feed a cat, their preference is toward flatter plates versus the bowls. And even the water bowls that make sure the water is high up on the bowl so it doesn't have to reach down low. So good question.
Okay.
I love it.
Yeah, I just wonder if they were going to push the food off the plate, but they'll pick it up later.
You know what? Get a lip. Yeah, just like a mild lip to it. We use for here at the clinic, we'll use the metal dishes that have just a tiny lip to it. They can still get to it, but not push it off. Yeah.
Almost like a Tupperware lid upside down kind of thing.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay. I just wonder if that was a true thing or not. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was, you're my physician, by the way, my pet's physician. And you recommended Orozyme for the dental treatment for my cats that you put in their little pouch.
Yes.
Which is for like teeth. Yeah.
Yes,
and that's
exactly.
helpful.
Exactly.
Okay, Suzanne,
absolutely.
Thanks so much. Quickly, now we only have about a minute here, maybe a little less. Let's go to Sylvia in Albany. Sylvia, you'll be the last one today.
Hi, doctor.
Are you still there?
Hello?
Hello. Oh. Did you get another call, Sylvia?
Hello?
Hello, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, we only got about 20 seconds for your question, so go ahead.
A constipation. What can I do for my cat who's constipated? I give it Miralax, like an eighth of a teaspoon, and that doesn't do it. I have used Lactulose from the vet, but it nauseates him. What can I use for this cat?
Okay. Doctors, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, we only got about 15 seconds, so go ahead.
Yeah, if it's not responding to that typical Miralax of an eighth of a teaspoon to a quarter of a teaspoon, then you may need to do further workup on this. It sounds like it may be more of a megacolon where it's getting stuck in that colon area. And food and diet changes, canned food, highly digestible food, those are helpful with fiber.
That's a great way to leave it, but we're actually out of time here. So Dr. Chris Dallas, Dr. Susan Ciculli, thank you both so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ray.
Great.
See ya.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Support comes from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. Nine Pin Cider Works, hard cider from local apples, pizza, and small plates. Now also serving lunch 7 days a week starting at noon, ninepincider.com. And Kent Hicks Construction Company, featuring East Branch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready and low in embodied carbon, traditional to modern styles available, eastbranchhomes.com. Once again, thanks to Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas for being here. Thank you for listening. Great pet calls today. Great pet emails. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. We'll do it again soon. Zach Malloy, our engineer. Rob Chacon, also an engineer. Today he screened the calls. Thank you, sir. Tomorrow on the program, some Irish antiques with Mark Lawson. Is that an Irish name? We'll find out tomorrow.